Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's TOC podcast. I'm Joe Weichert, chair of O'Reilly's Tools of Change Conference. And if you want to see all of the upcoming TOC products and events that we have in the works, be sure to visit us at O'Reilly.com/TOC. I'm joined today by Joe Esposito, president of Portable CEO Consulting. Joe works with a variety of clients, and I believe he writes some of the most thought-provoking articles about our industry on the Scholarly Kitchen blog. If you don't follow him there, you need to, and you'll find it at scholarlykitchen.sspnet.org. Joe, welcome to this TOC podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
So, Joe, I'm concerned about Amazon's growing dominance in the publishing industry, and you recently wrote a terrific article providing your thoughts on how B&N can give Amazon a better run for the money. And the thing that jumped out at me in that article was you talked about how B&N needs an MCI solution. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Well, yeah. If you go back quite a distance in time, MCI, the old MCI was competing with the old AT&T for long-distance telephony. AT&T was the market leader. And MCI came up with a marketing program called Friends and Family, which essentially exploited their number two position at AT&T's disadvantage. And it essentially restructured the way pricing took place in long-distance telephony. So what I was suggesting is that Barnes & Noble, instead of trying to chase Amazon doing precisely what Amazon is doing, which I think is a hopeless task, try to come up with a way, a different marketing strategy that would really restructure the way books are sold. I think it's also going to be very hard for the Barnes & Noble people to come up with this because of matters of pride. They don't really want to acknowledge the fact that they are a distant number two in this evolving world now.
And, you know, related to that, one of the things that I guess concerns me about B&N trying to really go head-to-head here is they've got all these hundreds of stores that is kind of this legacy revenue stream that they have to protect. And do you feel like that in any way kind of gets in Barnes & Noble's way of being able to kind of rethink and reinvent their industry?
Well, I think that's a good point. I would be astonished if they don't spend a lot of time thinking about that because it's the part of the business that's generating something like $7 billion in revenue a year. So I don't think anybody walks away from $7 billion in revenue very, very quickly. On the other hand, it has to be said that Barnes & Noble has surprised everyone, certainly it surprised me, in their ability to use those bricks and mortar stores as ways of promoting their whole online presence. When the new CEO, William Lynch, came in, he set up all of these boutiques within the Barnes & Noble store merchandising the Nook Reader. And if you go into a Barnes & Noble store today, it's a different experience from what it was even 5 years ago. I'm sure that the people who are the advocates of the Barnes & Noble physical stores were screaming about losing all of that important retail space for the merchandising of the Nook device. On the other hand, because of that strategy, Barnes & Noble now has 25% of the consumer ebook market. They would never have had that without it. So you have to say that it seems that these physical stores have strategic value that is generally underappreciated by a lot of people in the industry today.
So shifting gears for a minute here, what about Amazon Prime? Now, I feel like Jeff Bezos and the organization there, they've just done a terrific job of converting Prime from what was originally a physical goods shipping program to more of a digital one. Can you see a future where someone else could develop a serious competitor to Prime?
Well, that's a good question. First, I think we have to say here that Amazon is where it is because they're very, very good at what they do. They're so good at what they do, there are times that you just really want to just applaud some of their new business initiatives. And I am anything but an Amazon basher. I'm an Amazon admirer. Some of the comments I've made about Amazon have to do not with Amazon itself, but with the broader ecosystem for publishing and what it means to have one player be so dominant, which I don't think is a good thing. Amazon Prime is interesting. I am not myself an Amazon Prime customer. I do purchase books from Amazon, but not that many. Most of the books I purchase in bricks and mortar stores in print because I happen to have a wonderful community bookstore at my town, which I wanted to choose. That's a personal and let's call it a political decision that I do that. When I order books online, I could order them from any number of places, whether it's Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and I have e-readers that support multiple things. I have an iPad for anything that's not from Amazon, for example, and I have a Kindle Touch for Amazon books. And I make this point only to say that one doesn't have to be allow oneself to be locked in if you don't want to. But as far as competing with Amazon Prime, at some point they're going to run into the same problem that Netflix is having. And the problem is that to put things into Amazon Prime, you're going to have real challenges with the copyright holders. Not every copyright holder is going to want to be in that form of marketing, and they're going to start to feel that Amazon Prime for digital books might not be in their broader economic interest because it could shut them out from other sales channels. Now, that is precisely what Netflix is experiencing with first the defection of HBO and now Stars and other things, that the cost of getting content into these digital aggregations goes up and up and up. And I think at some point Amazon is going to be faced with the fact that the cost of Prime is going to have to rise to continue to support that. That creates opportunities for other people to get in there. I would predict that what we're going to see are other kinds of Prime-like solutions, or let's call them Netflix-like solutions, because Netflix really invented the whole thing, and we should always give credit to the creative people. What we're going to start to see, perhaps, will be aggregations along vertical lines, just as Mike Schatzkin likes to talk about. For example, an aggregation sold in digital form of science fiction novels, or an aggregation perhaps for cookbooks and things like that. And let's not forget, we already have a good precedent as the Safari platform from O'Reilly, which of course is the grandfather of all of this. I think that that really does point to the direction to the future, and I don't think Amazon is going to own the whole thing, although they might want to.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it, and I think you're right that having more of a vertical audience appeal might be the solution there, because it just feels like out the gate what they tried to do was jam as much content as they could without any rhyme or reason, let's say, to a vertical in mind. And I know there were a lot of publishers that pushed back, because even in Amazon's own press release, they acknowledged that they were paying publishers a flat fee as opposed to a paid performance type model, which I strongly feel like in order to be part of something like that, it has to be a pay-for-performance model. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it not only does it have to be a paid-for-performance model, but it's going to have to there's not going to be a choice of the matter. Nobody is going to drop major authors into these services and allow them to subsidize the less important authors in these services. People are going to say at some point, yes, there is a benefit for working together and collaborating and working through aggregations and so forth, but I personally don't want to be responsible for lifting all the other boats that's floating on this particular sea. So people are going to object to that. The thing is that the model that we have today is probably not the model we're going to have in 36 months. This is a fast-changing environment, and I think many people try to think that the marketing programs of today are going to be with us forever. And that's simply silly. It's just not going to work that way.
Yeah, that's another terrific point. I keep trying to remind myself and others that if we could fast forward to 3 to 5 years from now and look back to today, we'd probably laugh at how quaint this industry is and how simplistic our product offerings are. And speaking of product offerings, let's talk for a minute about mobile platforms. What are your thoughts on publishers making the investment in platform-specific apps for, let's say, iOS or Android versus focusing on something that's more platform-agnostic like EPUB?
I think what you're going to find is there's going to be some experimentation in the platform-specific things, in large part because all the publishers now, at least all the ones that have any resources to experiment, are trying to figure out which is the path to the future. But over time, I think that when they start to contemplate what it means to make separate kinds of investments for multiple platforms, they're going to retreat to look for industry standards and how they can make something once and then have it run everywhere. Now, that may be a pipe dream on publishers' parts. And let's not forget that any day now we're expecting Apple to announce some big new initiative in the world of college textbooks. But publishers may experiment with device-specific or platform-specific implementations. But in the end, the economic interest they have is not to do that. The economic interest is to develop something that they can run in multiple places and to keep their overall development costs down. So I think that's going to be the longer-term trend.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about digital rights management. You mentioned in a separate article on the Scholarly Kitchen that you're in favor of DRM in principle, but opposed to it in practice. Now, I'm 100% anti-DRM, so tell me why you're in favor of it in principle.
Well, the principle, I would say, is that people who make things should have a say in how they're used. And I'm a staunch supporter of people who want to do that. But this is one of those things where you sometimes find yourself marching in a parade, and you look to the left, and you look